Hey y'all.
Sup y'all.
Season 2.
I know. We did it.
We missed you. Yeah.
Kiss my baby.
Yeah. So season 2 has a totally different narrator.
I hate it. I don't mean to be rude.
I know, I do too. I don't, she's not my favorite. And maybe, you know what, that's how I felt in season 1, right? Because I was so used to Sheila Martin that I was like, I can't do anybody else. Then I got used to the first season narrator, and now we have a second season narrator, and I'm not ready for it.
But here's why I don't love this new narrator. I'll tell you. Because she doesn't seem to have a ton of personality. Like, whereas season one narrator, tons of personality. She's very, very sassy. This one is just kind of like factual. Like, it's very History Channel.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if maybe that's why they got rid of the first one or why they made a change. If they were like, you're putting too much personality into it. We need somebody who's more not. I don't know, but.
It's a no from me, dog.
Yeah, it's only episode one, so I'm gonna see if she kind of works her way into it, you know? Maybe she worms her way into our hearts.
I will right not now. See that. I am going to say that I don't like her already. Snap judgments. Oh,
okay. Okay. All right. Well, that's your journey. Let's see who wins. You'll probably win. This one is Adele Craven.
On the early evening of July 12th, 2000, suburban Cincinnati housewife Adele Craven returned home with her two little boys after a busy day of running errands. It seemed like an ordinary night. It would prove to be anything but. Something was terribly wrong at the comfortable suburban house at 362 Caramel Ridge. The front door was ajar, and there was a body at the bottom of the basement stairs.
That's how we open.
I just have some feelings about that description. And that's it. Okay, so like, all right, body at the basement, body at the bottom of the basement stairs. Woo!
That is a lot of alliteration.
It really is. And then we're just like, Adele was born, Adele Vicuna, in 1963. It's like, okay.
Jump right into it.
Into a Hispanic working class family in Long Beach, California. We meet Julie Boyce, the neighbor, and she said that Adele grew up with not a lot of money or luxuries, and she kind of had like a hard knock life. But she was determined to make a better life for herself, and then she met the man of her dreams. Stephen Craven was a Coast Guard pilot from middle class America, and Adele, before that, could only dream of middle class America. This was the dream for her.
This was the ticket in.
Exactly. They got married in 1989. And since Stephen was a pilot, he pretty much could work wherever he wanted. And Paul Long, a reporter, said
he got a job with Delta. I think they were living in Long Beach.
I wonder where Paul Long is from because his accent is very interesting.
I thought the same thing. I don't think he has a Cincinnati accent, I wouldn't think.
It's almost New England-y, like the way his, the ends of his words kind of, it's New England, but also like Georgia, Georgians do this too. It's very, like Blanche Devereaux, like, you know what I mean? The inflection, yeah. But his is not Southern.
No, yeah. He definitely had a very interesting accent. Because he said, yeah, there was a few times I was like, where did that come from? In 1991, they had their first son, Daniel, and not long after that, they moved to Cincinnati. So Delta ended up building like a hub in that area, and they were like, this will be a great place to raise a family. The cost of living is lower there. Let's give it a go. It'll be the perfect place to raise a family. So they got a brand new 2,200 square foot home in Edgewood, Kentucky, which was an upscale suburb of Cincinnati. And they said Stephen at that time was making like $200,000 a year in freaking that's like 1991.
Amazing. Get it, Stephen. Yeah. Also, when I was taking notes for this, do you know the way that I remembered to spell Cincinnati? Babes in Toyland.
C-I-N-C-I-N-A-T-T-I, Cincinnati. Yep, me too. Every single time I spell Cincinnati, that's all I can think of is Babes in Toyland. Yes. I have not watched that movie in like 30 years, it feels like.
But it stuck with you. Yeah. Mississippi, same. M-I, crooked letter I.
crooked letter I. Humpback I.
So good.
Yeah. Jim Hanna, a reporter, said that it was the kind of place that you had backyard barbecues and kids rode their bikes up and down the sidewalks. And
it's like Leave It to Beaver.
Mm-hmm. Picture perfect. Like, I feel like it's like that Dennis the Menace neighborhood, the live action Dennis.
Yes.
Menace. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In 1994, a few months after her 30th birthday, Adele had their second son, Joseph. And Amy Boyce, another neighbor, I'm assuming is the other
Julie's sisters. Yes. Yeah.
She said, as a mother, Adele was awesome. She was just like a totally great mom. And she pretty much had to be like a single mom for most of the time because Stephen was always traveling because he's an airline pilot. He's never home. But they said that a lot of marriages would struggle with that, and they seemed to be like that much stronger for it. And they had this like marriage that everybody in the area wanted their marriage to be like. And I don't know.
It was interesting. That's
more power to you, because if I had to do all the kid stuff by myself all the time, I would go crazy.
Right.
And I Same. Would be real mad at my husband.
Yes. Resentful. Yeah. To the max.
Exactly. They said Adele had a quick smile and a cheerful attitude, and she made friends really quickly. She was super involved in the church. We do meet a juror, Stephanie Morton. She said they loved the Lord, they loved their church, and they gave a lot of their time to the church because they worked in it. They were living the perfect life. This was one that she actually, the narrator, did not say she had at all.
Mm-mm.
Actually, I think in this one, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think in the trailer, you know, in the first season, she would give three things, you know, like lies, deception, and love triangles next on Snapped. Like,
yes, this one did not have that at all.
Uh-uh, it didn't do that. So I guess we're seeing a little bit of evolution, I guess.
But then it evolves back because look at where we, but anyway, we'll get to it. It's fine.
Yeah. You know, everybody's talking about how perfect their life is, how perfect their marriage is, all this stuff. They're making really good money. They've got these two beautiful kids. They've got it all this stuff. And then we kind of start to hear that maybe the marriage is not as perfect as it seems, which is always the case, right?
Yes, yes.
The neighbor, Amy, said that she heard Stephen yell at Adele once when she was over at their house about bills and money mostly. That she spent too much money or he didn't like what she was doing with the money. I mean, finances are one of the main things that couples fight about. It may be the main thing.
I think so. It's definitely a point of friction for a lot of couples.
I would think that at least at one point or another in your marriage, finances are going to be a point of contention.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it matters how much money you make. I don't think it matters, you know, if both people are working, if just what, like, whatever it is, you're going to fight over money at some point. Somebody's mm-hmm. going to get one too many iced white mochas at Starbucks.
Well, people don't see the value in spending their money the same way. They don't see, okay, well, that makes sense to spend it on or whatever, vice versa. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Wayne Wallace, the detective in the case, said that Stephen would criticize her weight, her appearance, her spending habits. He'd even taken away the checkbook and the credit cards. And then that's all we hear about that. The one sentence, basically. And I'm like, mm-hmm. can we get a little more? Yeah. Can we get a little more information about that? Like, we don't, I mean, so Amy did say, I heard him yell at her once, but I don't know. I feel like, again, we said it all the time in season one. Season two is the same way. These are only, you know, once you cut commercial breaks out, it's 20 minutes of content, 22 minutes of content, whatever. So there's not a lot of time, but I feel like this would play a big role, right? Like,
you would think.
So you'd think they'd spend a little bit more time on that or maybe talk to some more people or kind of unpack that dynamic a little bit. Is there verbal and emotional abuse going on? Is there physical abuse? You know, like what's happening there. But Adele is getting to the point now where she is thinking, like, maybe life would be better without being with Steven. Maybe I don't need that anymore. But she told her friends that divorce was not an option. And she said she could never divorce him because he'll never let me have my children. And I wonder how that would really play out in court, because if he's traveling all the time, I would highly doubt they're going to award the children to him full time.
Exactly. Like, she would have time with them for sure.
I would think. I mean, it would be hard to go from being with your kids all the time to half the time.
Sure. But if you think about it, hindsight, with a lot of the Snapped episodes that we've seen, if the motivating factor is I can't get a divorce because I'll never see my kids, and then you end up going to jail.
Yeah, prison for life, then, hey, you just defeated your own purpose.
Exactly.
Because really, that's not the purpose, right? Like, that's not why. That's not their motivation. That sounds better, but that's not what the motivation is. The motivation is typically, I want a life insurance policy. Mm-hmm. I can start my life over. I can do whatever I want to do. Oh, and by the way, I'll have $100,000 or whatever it comes to. Like,
right. Or I don't want to have to pay them a lot of money or miss out on all the money in the divorce. So it's usually right. It's, yeah, greed, money driven.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. James Murray, the forensic psychologist, says that a lot of women feel obligated to stay in marriages where they feel trapped. But he said women tend to feel less power than men. And then he goes on to say, you know, they tend to stay in marriages where they feel trapped and stuff like that. And I think he meant, I don't know, maybe he just meant in general that women just tend to not feel as powerful as men. And I mean, I know that that is, it's a thing, but I don't know. It just, sometimes he just rubs me the wrong way, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I agree wholeheartedly. I don't know if this is a case of it was the early 2000s and things have changed. I don't know if it's a case of he just tries to mansplain everything. I don't know what it is, but that is how it feels. Everything that he says, almost, I'm like, oh, is that how it is, Dr. Murray? Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I don't feel as powerful as my husband. Okay, thanks. Thanks for explaining that. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. They have women forensic psychologists that they talk to. So why don't they just, I feel like, a show that's obviously about women and geared towards women, maybe keep it with the women explaining how women feel in marriages.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I worked for a doctor at one point who started to become a specialist in mommy makeovers, and he wrote a book on it. And in the like foreword or prologue or whatever, he tried to talk about how he understands what women go through after they have kids because he and his wife have kids together. And I was like, strike that from the record, dude. You cannot say that you understand because you've seen somebody else go through it. You've not gone through it. Like,
yeah,
you've got to remove that.
You're going to be doing so much damage to yourself if you continue to be like, I totally get it. Yes, power to you. I got it. I feel it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean because my body didn't change at all. Like, you are, I think I even said to him, you're going to end up on an episode of Snapped. I think I may have said that. Like, wow. Yeah. So, you know, but in later episodes, it doesn't feel like this. I can't remember specifically if they bring more women experts in or not, but it just doesn't, it doesn't feel that way. So maybe it is just a sign of the times. I don't know. But anyway. Yeah. They started seeing a counselor to try to save their marriage, and by the summer of 2000, they were doing a whole lot better, and they decided to renovate their whole entire house. They were, like, basically going to gut it and start over.
And I think that they said in the episode that it could have been, like, a physical representation of them trying to, like, resurface their marriage, you know, like, revive their marriage. They're like, okay, we're going to change everything. So everything is new and fresh, and we feel like it's breathed new life into this.
Yeah, yeah, like almost a change of scenery, but without actually picking up and moving.
Yes.
So to do the work around the house, they hire a guy named Rusty McIntyre, who was a baggage handler at Delta, and he also was a handyman. So they bring him in to do the work on the house. He did a fantastic job. They really liked working with him. It went so well that he and Adele were like, you know what? We could start a painting business together. And they started getting all kinds of jobs.
Decide to get a painting business. I hate painting. Painting sucks.
It's the worst thing ever. It's so tedious. I hate it. Yeah, I don't like it.
A lot of people like it, though, because then you can hire them to do it. I'm just not. Exactly. It's not for me.
No. That's a no for me, dog. But yeah, I guess they really liked it. They wanted to do this painting business, and more power to them. And everything seemed to be going pretty good until Rusty bought Adele a cell phone. And Steven's not happy about this.
Mm-mm.
He doesn't like it. And Julie Boyce was like, he didn't like the fact that she had a cell phone. And at first I was like, well, that's controlling. But then she was like, because the only person that called her on it was Rusty. So it's like, although I could see, now this is not what happened, but I could see if, say, you own a business with somebody, you know, maybe you have like a way of communicating, you know, for business. Like if she's at a job here, he's at a job there, and they need to get in touch with each other, they're not going to call each other on clients' house phones or whatever.
Right.
That's not what happened. But, you know, there could be a logical explanation for it.
Right. But Steve definitely had some intuition there.
Definitely. And even though he wasn't real happy about it, he wasn't super comfortable with it. Rusty and Adele kept working together. They kept moving forward on their house remodel project. And then at around 9:30 a.m. on July the 12th, 2000, Adele asked a neighbor if they'd watch the boys, because she said that she, Steve, and Rusty needed to go over some changes to the basement bathroom. You know, they needed to kind of hash this out. So could you keep an eye on the boys while we do that? The neighbor's like, yeah, sure, whatever. So about an hour later, Adele goes and picks up the boys. And then she's like, okay, we're going to go run some errands. And they're gone most of the day. They go to the bank. They go to a cell phone store. They get lunch. They stop by a neighbor's where Adele was going to help out with painting some trim. They got home at 8:30 p.m. I would say they're gone all day, not most of the day, but
the whole live long day.
Yeah. And their kids are young. So that's a long time to keep your kids out, I would think.
I would shopping be and stuff. Exhausted.
Yeah. You know, they're like pitching a fit. I mean, I don't know if they got dinner. They don't say they got dinner. That's late. But anyway, they get home at 8:30 p.m. Like we said in the beginning, the door was open. So Adele goes to a neighbor's house because she's scared. She's like, the door shouldn't be open. So Julie Boyce, she went over to her house, and she says she came over and told my dad, and my dad offered to go check out the house for her. So he walks around the back of the house and looked in the window, and he saw the man. And there was a body at the bottom of the stairs in a pool of blood. And they show this image 150 times, it seems like. Mm-hmm. It's very, I mean, it's a crime scene photo. It's disturbing. It's horrific.
It's awful. Yes.
It was the body, obviously, of Stephen Craven. And the detective Wallace said he suffered blunt force trauma to the head. He had crowbar strikes to his forehead, the rear of his head, and the left and right sides of his head. My God.
That's horrific. The most brutal.
I cannot imagine. Attack.
No.
Yes. A neighbor took the kids to their house and put them to bed while Adele was questioned by police. They said she was crying, and she just kept saying it must have been a burglary gone wrong, which is really weird to say immediately after you find out that your husband is killed. Like, why do you need to say that, you know? You'd think that you'd be asking the police, what happened? What happened? How did this happen? Like, you wouldn't be trying to give them, like, well, it had to have been a burglary gone wrong. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with it, if that's what you're asking me. Like,
right.
You know, it's just typically people aren't going to do that unless they have a reason to do that. It's strange. And the detective, Wayne Wallace, was like, this was not a burglary. There was a credit card by the body. There's valuables everywhere. You know, he's beat over the head with a crowbar. This is personal. This is not just a burglary gone wrong. But they needed to find out who would want Stephen dead. So police radioed back to the department to have the name Craven put in the database, but it was already there. It wasn't Stephen's name that was in the database, though. What happened?
Ugh, this is crazy.
Yeah. A police officer, Sean Clyer, said that he was on patrol one night and he'd gone behind the local church, and it appeared that there was some possible sexual activity going on in the back of the truck, and it was Adele Craven and Rusty McIntyre. So they wrote up a report for that. So that's why Adele's name, or the Craven name, is in the system already, because they've gotten caught messing around in the church parking lot.
In the back of a pickup truck. Like, that might as well be on the parking lot. Like,
exactly.
Pavement.
Yeah. So when the neighbors were questioned, they said that Rusty had been spending a lot of time at the Craven house, and more specifically when Stephen was out of town for work. Amy said that she would see his truck come down the street at midnight and not leave until the next morning when she was leaving for school. And police were sure that Stephen was not the victim of a botched robbery, and they were sure that Rusty and Adele were behind it. Wayne Wallace said that Adele had packed a bag with several pairs of underwear in it, her makeup bag, her passports, the kids' travel paperwork, and $4,000 cash.
And Wallace made a big deal about, like, oh my gosh, a ton of makeup. She had a big bag of makeup.
He did. He was like, that woman packed so much makeup. You wouldn't believe it. Like, I think the more important item there is the passports and the cash.
Yeah.
She's pulling like a Scott Peterson, but
it's like, you your eyes how much makeup was in this bag. I just thought it was funny that that's the point where he was like really digging in there.
She has so much makeup. I can't stress this enough. Like, yeah.
So the police had proof of Rusty and Adele's affair because of their cell phone records, and they had receipts from credit cards. Like,
they literally did nothing to conceal this.
No. Wayne said they communicated at least 500 phone calls over 1,800 minutes in a period of about 6 weeks. I hope to God that this was like nights and weekends.
Oh, for sure. Otherwise, that bill is going to be horrific.
Yes. And Paul Long said that they stayed the night at a hotel called the Wildwood Inn in Florence. Basically, this hotel was just a place for couples to go and have sex.
It's like a rent by the hour kind of place?
I guess so.
I mean, there's really not much else you would be doing there, apparently.
Right. You're not going there just to swim in the pool.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to swim in the pool there. Then one of the neighbors came forward with some really incriminating information. So Amy Boyce said that Adele told her lots of things like...
Adele made lots of comments to me about hiring a hitman. She wishes Steve's plane would crash or he would get into a car accident. I took it as a joke.
Now, she was young because she and Julie were like in school at the time or whatever, I guess. I have some questions. Why is Adele hanging out with what is apparently teenagers?
Yeah.
Also, here's the thing. We've said this before because this happens in so many episodes. There are days, sure, that somebody is going to be like, I could wring my husband's neck. You know, he did this and like I could just kill him or whatever. That is so very different than saying, my husband is a pilot. I wish his plane would crash and he'd die one day.
I wish I could find a hitman.
I wish I could find a hitman. That's pretty bad. Now, I mean, I don't know. If you call the police every time somebody said something, you know, I mean, I get like, what are you going to report? She said she wanted to hire a hitman. Well, did she? You know, I know there's not a ton that they can do necessarily. I don't really know what the right answer is, but that feels so very different than, oh, I could just kill him, you know? Like, those are just two so very different things, and that doesn't feel like a joke to me. And obviously it's not, because now he's dead.
Exactly.
On July 21st, 9 days after Stephen's death, police showed up at a neighborhood pool and arrested Adele and charged her with murder. when they looked at Rusty, when they looked for Rusty McIntyre, he had left the country. He had taken his family on a cruise, and they don't talk about him other than he was a baggage handler before, but they say he took his family on a cruise. I'm assuming he's got a wife and kids.
It kind of seemed like that, yeah.
Yeah, they don't really talk about it, but, you know, again, we on our other podcast a lot, we talk about that ripple effect, like how many people are affected by these things that happen. It's like, you've got a wife and kids, Adele has kids, you know, there's just so many people that are affected. So he's on this cruise, he'd left the country, and he paid for this cruise with money that Adele had given him that she was supposed to use for a divorce. But she didn't need that money anymore.
Apparently, yeah, obviously not.
Yeah. On July the 28th, Rusty got back from his cruise and he was taken into custody. And Adele was like, I didn't have anything to do with it. You know, I'm totally innocent, all this stuff. Rusty broke down and confessed. He couldn't maintain that. He admitted to Wayne that he had something to do with it, but he said that he hired a third party. He said that he and Adele paid a man named Ronald Pryor, who they called a down on his luck criminal, to take the hit, and they paid him $15,000. So for somebody like Pryor, $15,000 is a hell of a payout.
Oh, yeah. And I'm actually surprised, because in a lot of other of these episodes, especially not just Snapped episodes, but any hired hitman case, $15,000 is more money than you see changing hands for the death of someone else, unfortunately.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of them are like, I'll give you $500. And they're like, all right, fine, cool, whatever. Yeah. Like 15. And you know, her husband's making $200,000 a year. I would assume if there's a life insurance policy, it's a pretty sizable one. Like, she's not hurting for cash here.
$15,000 is peanuts.
Yeah, pretty much. And they arrested Ronald Pryor, and he confessed as well. But the interesting thing about his confession is they didn't tell him that Rusty had been arrested and confessed, and they didn't tell Rusty that they'd arrested Ronald. So they both gave pretty much the same story, and neither one of them knew that the other was arrested or had confessed. They both implicate Adele. They both give pretty much the exact same story. So it seems very credible, their confessions, and the fact that Adele is implicated as well. Because it's not like they're walking in there and being like, Rusty told us everything. He told us that Adele paid you this money and blah, blah, blah. Like, it wasn't like that. They said they basically were just like, tell us what happened, and both stories matched up. But Adele was like, no, they're both lying. I don't know how they came up with the exact same story without talking to each other, but they did, and that can happen. And Rusty did this on his own because he wants to take Steven's place. Like, well,
I mean, it's possible that Rusty did want to take Steven's place, but Rusty wasn't taking any steps to divorce his wife if he had
exactly
one.
Right. Yeah. It didn't seem like he was trying to leave his family. I think he may have kind of been cool with
this, like, secret lovers in his type truck. Of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And getting, because if Steven's gone, again, they don't talk about the life insurance policy in this episode at all. They may not have had one, I don't know, but I just assume they did because Steven was making a lot of money. But if he's gone, I mean, he's making $200,000 a year. That's gone once he's gone. So, like, yeah, you might get a life insurance payout, but that's one, you know, maybe a couple of years worth of salary versus like a whole lifetime of it, potential alimony that she would get if they just got divorced. I don't get it. But obviously she had some resentment and some hatred for him.
Oh, yeah.
Police spent a lot of time gathering evidence, and Rusty told the police that he had thrown the murder weapons and his blood-soaked clothes out into a landfill. And Wayne Wallace was like, we spent like 16 days excavating the landfill. And my cynical mind was like, why are you wasting time on that? You're just looking for clothes or a weapon, like, not to
be.
Never
gonna happen.
I know, never gonna happen. I'm like, if it's a body we're talking about, excavate it. You are never gonna find clothes or a tiny weapon. They found some clothes. I could not believe it. He proved me wrong. I felt very I felt like a little turd, really. Because I was like, never going to happen, dude. Like, what are you doing? Turd. I know. But he said like day 12 or 14, they found the boots that Ronald Pryor wore and they were covered in Stephen Craven's blood. I was like, slap my booty and call me Judy. Found them. I did not think it was going to happen.
Wow.
So Rusty's trial date is fast approaching and he makes a plea deal and he agrees to testify against Adele to avoid the death penalty, which is, again, it's like the early bird gets the worm. You're the first to make a deal.
Yes, very smart of him to do that.
Yeah.
It's annoying, but it's very smart of him to do that.
Yeah, it is. Luke Morgan, the prosecutor, said that he received a recommended sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole for 25 years. In June of 2001, Ronald Pryor took his chances with a jury. That was not a good move.
No.
And you know it's not going to be a good move. They found your boots covered in Stephen Craven's blood. Like, what is your defense going to be here? Exactly. You're going to be convicted, especially since Rusty's already pleaded guilty. Mm-hmm. You're donezo, dude. You've confessed, all that. He got convicted and was sentenced to death.
I was shocked, honestly. Like, I did not expect to hear sentenced to death.
I know, I didn't either, but technically it's Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
So, you know.
True.
Then there's Adele. She's, of course, continuing to maintain her innocence. Her trial date was set for October 28th, 2002, and prosecutors were convinced they had it in the bag. They had all this evidence. They had two convictions already. They were like, they keep throwing them at us, keep knocking them out of the park. They're like, give me another one. I'll convict them.
Slam dunks.
Yeah, exactly. Then they found out that Ronald wasn't going to testify against her because he's like, I still have an appeals process because I've been sentenced to death and I do not want to jeopardize that. So I'm going to sit this one out. So then they only had Rusty. And so now it's Adele's word against Rusty's. Prosecution led with the motive. They said that Adele wanted to be rid of her husband, but she wanted to keep the kids and keep basically like her cushy lifestyle. She didn't want to give any of that up. And prosecutors put her neighbors on the witness stand. Julie Boyce said that she would often say, I wish he'd leave and never come back. I wish his plane would crash. At least eight people, different people, said that she said she wanted Stephen dead and wanted to hire a hitman. Why would you say that?
But it happens all the time. It's amazing. Like, and they're like, they'll say it because they can't help themselves and they feel it. And then they're like, oh, that was in confidence. You weren't supposed to tell.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, come on, think about things, guys. Like, come on.
Yeah.
The state alleged that she lured Rusty into an affair and convinced him to kill her husband. I don't think that's how it happened. I think they ended up in an affair. I think that she was unhappy in her marriage. And I think that she saw the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that she was like on the prowl for somebody to hook, like, you know, sink her hooks into and then be like, okay, now kill Steven.
Yeah, because I think her telling at least eight people that they could turn up that she wanted to hire a hitman was probably like her feeling it out. Like, man, if I could just hire a hitman, I would. And maybe her hoping that somebody would be like, actually, I could help you with that. Or actually, mm-hmm. I know somebody. I feel like she was just kind of putting that out there. So I don't think that she necessarily started an affair to make that person the hitman. I think she just started the affair. Like, and it worked out.
Yeah, I was going to say it worked out beautifully. For her.
Yeah, because I think she was going to a lot of people with that prospect. And Rusty, because I don't know if he was in love with her or what, but is like, okay, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
They said Adele led Stephen to the basement, and when he came down the steps, Ronald Pryor jumped out and hit him in the head with a crowbar. This is horrible. He hit him many times, but Stephen was not dead. And Adele went back down and said, he's not dead yet, and gave Ronald Pryor a gun to shoot him in the head. And Ronald Pryor shoots him once in the head. And then Adele goes back down and says, he's still not dead. And so Ronald Pryor shoots him two more times. This poor man. Mm-hmm. Like, regardless of, again, we don't get a lot of information about the dynamic of their relationship, really, and I don't know, maybe he didn't treat her very well. Nobody deserves to die like that. And to sit there and watch him be beat in the head with a crowbar and then be like, oh, he's still not dead. Shoot him once. Okay, he's still not dead. Shoot him a couple more times. I hope to goodness he could not hear what was going on.
Yeah, the only saving grace there, and it's not even a saving grace, the only kind of silver lining is hopefully Stephen was so incapacitated that he had no idea what was happening.
Yeah, it's horrific. Adele testified in her trial, and of course, her account was incredibly different than what Rusty said happened. Adele said that at the time of the murder, the affair was already over, and she talked about it like basically it was a super short-lived thing, you know, kind of happened a few times and then it fizzled out really quickly, but that Rusty wouldn't leave her alone, that he was stalking her, that she was afraid of him. That when she rejected him, he hired a hitman to kill her husband, which does not make any sense.
No. In what world, Adele?
Yeah. And she's crying on the stand and she's like, I trusted this man. I thought he was my friend. And
if she won anybody over with that, which she did, but I'm just shocked because watching it, I'm like, this is fake. These are fake tears. She's not even that good of an actress.
I know, totally. And some of the jurors bought it, I guess. Closing arguments were made on December 4th, 2002, and the jury went to deliberate. And on December the 6th, they requested a meeting with the judge, and they said they were hopelessly deadlocked, and the judge had to declare a mistrial. Prosecutors, though, were like, we're not giving up on this. We know she did this. So they were going to retry her. And this time they offered Ronald Pryor a deal, which again, we hate. But they said if he testified against her, they would commute his death sentence to life without parole. And he was like, all right, done deal. Got it. So now he at least gets the death sentence taken off the table. I feel more fine with this because he's at least remaining in prison.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they said, because you see so many times where they're like, okay, if we...
we'll commute this to time served.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, if we try you and you plead not guilty, you're going to get the death sentence. But if you will just go ahead and plead guilty, you can get 16 months in prison and walk out the door. Like, it's just exactly. Such a huge difference. It doesn't make any sense. But this, at least, they kept it to life in prison. Adele's second trial began on January of 2004. The same evidence was brought, but instead of just Rusty testifying, Ronald did too. 3 weeks into the trial, the defense asked for a meeting with the prosecution. And they were like, this is not going so good for us. It's going to end up being bad.
Yeah, we didn't actually know that Ronald was going to testify too. Yikes.
Yeah, so, So Adele was like, okay, actually, I did mastermind this whole thing. So I'm going to go ahead and plead guilty because I don't want to get the death penalty. And she was sentenced. Did it say what she was sentenced to?
No.
She's currently serving time in Kentucky's Correctional Institution for Women, and she will be eligible for parole in 2024. It says active inmate, and then it says hearing date 5/26/2020. Hearing action serve out.
What does that mean?
I don't know. What does serve out mean in a parole hearing? Serve out, SOT or serve out time, means a decision of the board that the inmate shall serve until the completion of his or her sentence. Okay. Because I was like, does serve out mean she's out?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, and it says months deferred NA, next parole eligibility date. There's nothing there. Proposed release date, nothing there. So maybe she was denied parole. Maybe that's what that means.
Okay.
Because it says she's still there. And under parole eligibility date, up in the top, it just says nothing. So.
Well, there you go. Maybe she's ineligible.
Yeah, maybe. So that's good, because, I mean, she definitely masterminded that. Their two sons live with Stephen's brother in Atlanta as of the time of the filming. So this is, golly.
That was 16 years ago?
Yeah.
So, or maybe 14 years or 15 years ago. So they possibly, depending on how old they were when this all happened, could be. Well, they were definitely older than three. So.
Yeah, the oldest one is 29. And then the other one would be 26. Yeah. I wonder if they have any contact with her, like how they.
I know.
How they feel. Because again, it's like you said your whole thing was you couldn't divorce him because you wanted to keep your kids. And now what? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Just they've lost both their parents. It's horrible.
It is. It's terrible.
Yeah. So that's it.
That's the episode.
And we will be back next week for episode 2.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.